What can people do to protect themselves and their data, or is this something that we should just give up?
Well, so this is, you know, a lot of people ask me this and they want like sort of the Edward Snowden operational security guide for like how I would use a phone or how I avoid surveillance. But guys, you don't want to live like me. You don't want to have ordinary people fighting an arms race against the most well-resourced intelligence services on the planet. You don't want ordinary people trying to out-engineer these technology companies that are basically earning more money than anybody else on the planet. That's not reasonable. It doesn't make sense. But really, the question for you is, how do you want to live? Everything we do now lasts forever, not because we want to remember it, but because we're no longer allowed to forget.
Mobile phone scam called SIM swapping.
This was one of the largest data breaches in history.
We are playing fast and loose with our data.
It's important to understand the sheer scale here.
Surveillance capitalism is driven to shape and influence our behavior.
It's just kind of a shrug, like, well, what can you really do?
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Signal Jam. I'm your co-host, Michael, and today I'm flying solo. Jay has been traveling and needs a little time to get back on the grid, so I'm doing a very quick episode to fill in the gaps, and we should have a fuller co-hosted episode out within the next few weeks or so. Today, I want to talk about threat modeling, but before we dive into that, let's cover a few updates and some housekeeping. First of all, we spent the last couple weeks getting some of our online presence up. We do have our website live now. It's signaljam.me, M-E. We also have some social media handles available. We have a Mastodon, a Blue Sky, an X, a Lemmy. We very briefly did have a Reddit, and despite our best efforts to age the account and try to get it past the fraud and spam filters, as soon as we made one comment, we got suspended. So that is currently in an appeals process. I am optimistic that it will come out of that, but I also just don't trust Reddit, and I'm not totally sure if that's going to be the case. So if it is unsuspended and we can use it freely, we'll update that on the website. Currently, you can visit our website and take a look at the sidebar or the footer to see what social media channels are available, and we'll update those as they become available. Also wanted to chat about the feedback we've received so far. We are only a few episodes in, and I have to say that we're both really pleasantly surprised by the amount of positive feedback and just the overall warm reception we've received. We've had several people reach out to us that have led to some really great conversations about privacy internationally. And that reminds me, we've had listeners on every continent except Africa and obviously Antarctica. So thank you so much for your feedback, your comments, your suggestions, and just the overall warmth and kindness that we've received. We're really grateful and kind of humbled, to be honest. On that note, please be encouraged to keep sending us your thoughts. We, of course, welcome feedback on what we can do to improve the show as we grow, but we also want to hear more about what you want to hear more about. Are there topics, techniques, or news that you want us to dive into? We want to make Signal Jam as community-driven as it can be, so please feel free to help steer the direction of the show by providing us feedback often and sharing your ideas. Speaking of being community-driven, I also want to take a quick moment to encourage your participation. If you go to our website, we do have a page called Participate that outlines some ways that you can get involved directly with the show, whether that's writing some articles and content that can be published to our blog, or even potentially coming on the show as a guest. For those who may be familiar with Michael Bazell's podcast and project, he did something that we took inspiration from. He had an online magazine called Unredacted, where it was kind of crowdsourced. He wrote articles, but he also had listeners submit articles. And there was some really awesome, insightful content that came out of that project. And so we took some heavy inspiration from that model, and we'd love to invite folks to submit content of their own. And it can really, truly be anything that comes to your mind. There's some basic standard submissions guidelines that we have posted on the website that you can read about. But, you know, as long as it materially relates to the core content of Signal Jam's mission, privacy and security, you know, keep that somewhat open-ended and feel free to go wild with it. Anything that comes to your mind, if there's a particular technique or topic that you'd like to discuss, or maybe you just want to provide a status update of how privacy looks in your locale, please feel welcome and encouraged to submit that. We've gone back and forth with a few folks about that over email, and I just want to make something, you know, particularly clear. If English is not your native or first language, please don't let that be a barrier to you. Aside from there being built-in tools in modern browsers, even the most privacy-respecting ones, to translate text on the page, we're also working on some potential multilingual options for the website, which I can't make any promises on that or even give really a timeline. It will be down the road at some point. For now, we'll
we'll probably have to rely on translations through plugins. But nevertheless, if English is not your first language, please don't let that stop you from submitting anything for consideration. The only editorializing that Jay and I plan to do is small corrections to grammar and spelling errors. That's it. The content that you provide to us will be published as we received it. If there's anything that needs major changes, you know, we would be in touch with you about that first. But anyways, all that to say, we really do encourage you, if you're interested and have a knack for writing or are interested in engaging that way, to submit something for consideration to be published on the blog. I think this would be a great way to get other folks' perspective and insight shared more broadly and start a greater discussion. Okay, with that, let's dive into our main topic, threat modeling. Oftentimes, when I'm asked by someone who's curious about privacy where they should start, I mention some tools and resources, and I also mention threat modeling. What I've found over the years, to be honest, is that this is not a particularly effective strategy. For whatever reason, threat modeling can often come across as a confusing and intimidating concept, and I've even seen it stop some people in their tracks. But I very much believe that having a basic understanding of threat modeling is important to everyone's journey. It helps set and manage expectations, provide clarity to your own process, and it can help lessen that inevitable privacy burnout stage that almost everyone seems to hit at some point. That time when you realize just how pervasive surveillance is, how advanced the commercial and governmental apparatuses that enable it are, and how overwhelming it can be, frankly, to take back even just a little bit of your privacy. So today, I wanted to do a quick chat about threat modeling in the hopes of demystifying it and clarifying it and trying to demonstrate why it's such a helpful tool to have in our arsenal. And if by the end of the episode, this process still sounds too complicated or convoluted, bear with me because I do have a small announcement that might make it a little easier to get started down the road. So if you do a search on threat modeling, you'll see a lot of links with enterprise-level discussions about security, usually within a business context around data storage and handling or software development. But at its core, threat modeling is just a process in which you identify things you want to protect and understand the threats against those things. And creating this understanding helps you decide how you best protect from those threats and then recognize the risks if you fail. And it's kind of a self-reinforcing loop too, because as you identify failure points, you create a better defense. So how does this apply to privacy, especially if you're just starting out? Well, think back to what got you initially interested in privacy. For example, for me, it was that I quickly discovered that posting my phone number on an internet marketplace to sell things led to that number being picked up by scammers, who then added me to group chats and spammed me with clearly fake offers repeatedly. No matter how many times I blocked that number, a new number would text me a few days or weeks later with the same crap. And this made me want to protect my phone number, if for no other reason than just to stop the annoyance of these constant scam texts. So if you parse out my scenario, what did I want to protect? My phone number. From who? Scam artists or just random people who might be looking to cause me trouble? How could I protect my true phone number while still conducting some business online? By getting a VoIP number that's not associated with my name and being able to discard it at any time. And what were the consequences if I fail to follow this process? Well, my real phone number leaks, I get constant spam text messages, I'd have to constantly block the numbers as they pop up, or probably eventually just change my phone number just to stop the texts altogether. Threat modeling is a larger, more comprehensive approach to the same process. In addition to, say, you know, a phone number, you'd also spend some time thinking about what else you want to protect and why and how. My favorite adaptation of threat modeling comes from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Now, before I get into that, let me just drop a giant disclaimer right here for both the newcomers and the more advanced listeners. Threat modeling is an inherently personal process. It differs for everybody. There are already some really great reads and watches from other privacy community members, and you'll notice almost all of them have a different approach to it, including following more advanced methodologies like Linden or doing a more simplified approach. And I think what's important to remember here is that both the process and the outcome are unique to your scenario and your life and your values. What's less important is that you follow a specific methodology to achieve an outcome that works for you, because that's really the goal. It's to find an outcome that works for you and then adapt it as necessary. Okay, so back to the process I like from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. What I like about their process is that it distills the main components of a more advanced methodology into more realistic, kind of average Joe type questions, and there's five of them. Number one, what do I want to protect? Number two, who do I want to protect it from? Three, how likely is it that I'll need to protect it? Four, how bad are the consequences if I fail? And lastly, how much trouble am I willing to go through in order to prevent those consequences? And I'll link to the EFF document in the show notes so you can take a look at this directly, but let's work through this together. I like to think of these questions as taking place sort of within categories, but if that's too much to start for you, that's okay. Just write down or note things as they come to mind. So let's do a really simple example of what could be considered a low or medium threat model maybe, and compare it against a higher one. Let's pick a few things that we might care about. Let's choose passwords and credentials, our home being physically broken into, and let's do a data mining one. How about Facebook knowing who we talk to online? So now that we've identified a few things that we care about, we need to ask ourselves who we're protecting them from, because the answer informs how we select an appropriate solution. Most of us want to protect our passwords from scammers who find this information in data breaches. And as far as our home, let's say that we want to protect it from burglars specifically. For our communications, we basically already answered that question. We're trying to keep our messages and calls confidential from Facebook. Now we can evaluate how likely it is that we need to protect those things from those entities. This is basically our risk factor. Data breaches happen all the time, so there's a good chance almost everyone would agree that there's a high risk of a data breach, at least in some point in the future, so protecting our credentials is a high priority. Now, for home break-ins, let's say that we live in a very low-risk area, maybe a rural area. Not a lot of residential break-ins or property crimes. The risk may be lower, but let's say we have some fancy jewelry or a nice TV or something to that effect in our home. Even though the risk may be lower statistically in our area, we still don't want to invite trouble. So let's say that this is maybe a medium priority. Facebook knowing who we talk to. How about for this scenario, let's suppose that we shut down our social media accounts a while ago and we no longer talk on Facebook. So the likeliness that we need to protect against this is lower since we're not directly engaging in it. But it's also not zero. If someone asks to communicate with us on WhatsApp, that priority might suddenly shift higher because it would reintroduce the risk of leaking that information to Facebook. So how bad are the consequences if we fail to protect these things? Well, if our password is breached and we happen to use the same password for all of our other accounts, it'll be easier for that criminal to work their way into our other accounts, which could just lead to a huge headache or worse, identity theft, ransoms, etc. Even if we're living in a low-risk area that doesn't experience much property crime, it would definitely be a shame if someone broke into our house and stole our favorite possessions. Not only is that an incredibly violating experience and potentially creates incentive for repeat theft, but we're also now on the hook to replace some of those really expensive items. And if we're an average Joe, especially if we've already had Facebook in the past, the consequences of them harvesting a little more data is probably not catastrophic, but definitely violates our principle to keep those communications confidential and away from Facebook and avoid that targeted advertising. So then lastly, how much trouble are we willing to go through to protect these things that we care about? Well, luckily, password managers are quite easy tools to use, and they provide a substantial security boost to our credentials. So implementing password managers as a solution and then making sure to adhere to good credential security practices is not a lot of trouble at all. This one we can embrace pretty quickly. For our home defense, we may be willing to go through a little bit of effort to increase our security. Maybe we can do an inspection around our home to see what the most likely points of entry are. We can implement some security solutions like window security bars or enhanced door strike plates. And we can also make sure that we close the curtains to our home when we leave to prevent people from casing it and seeing what we have inside. For our communications, we can shift to an end-to-end encrypted messenger with a focus on privacy and one that isn't controlled by Meta or Facebook. That means things like Signal or Simple X, maybe Session, and avoiding WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger altogether. We can also use a content blocker, maybe like uBlock Origin in our browsers to protect from embedded trackers by Meta and various websites we visit. So now you can see how we've identified things that we want to protect and then extrapolated that out into determining who and what the most likely threats against those things are, and doing so helped us create a plan to be more private and secure. Now, what would this threat model look like for, say, someone like Edward Snowden? Well, we can be sure he takes his credential security very seriously. If he credibly fears government agents stalking him, or worse, he absolutely cannot risk any disclosure of something as foundational as his credentials. So not only would a password manager be an absolute minimum solution for him, he would likely go many steps further and use an entirely offline password manager, maybe split up his credentials in different databases, keep backups on encrypted hidden storage volumes or buried somewhere only he knows the coordinates for, crazy spy stuff like that. He also probably has a very keen interest in ensuring his physical security. Aside from implementing some of the security solutions we talked about in the lower threat model, he also likely goes to extreme lengths to ensure the location of his home is not known to virtually anyone, maybe just his partner and children. And he's also probably very conscientious of his security outside the home, too. It's been reported that he, at least used to, probably still does, walk around with a disguise. We can take a leap here and assume he's not using any meta services, and he probably takes advantage of features like ephemeral messaging and Signal, or regularly wipes his device. There's also videos of him showing how he disassembles his phone and removes key components like the microphones and cameras. I wouldn't be surprised if he uses a Faraday bag or doesn't bring his device with him everywhere he goes. So the risks to his life and freedom are significantly greater to maybe yours and mine, so naturally the steps he takes to protect the things he cares the most about are far more complex than the ones our average Joe would take. So you can see how the answers to these questions about your risk factor, or how bad the consequences of failure are, or how much trouble you're willing to go through to protect what's important to you, really can greatly influence the scope and severity of your own threat model. Now, I do want to be clear here. What I just presented is a very, very simplified example. The idea here is to kind of get you thinking about what you care about protecting, and then building on that to understand what solutions are available to you and what make the most sense to implement now and then later. It's very likely over time that your threat model will adapt and evolve as the things you care about protecting change and evolve too. Okay, now earlier I mentioned I have a small announcement. I definitely do not want to tease too much, and I also want to manage expectations on this. We're working with a developer right now to produce an interactive tool that will eventually live on our website to help you with threat modeling. It won't create your threat model, because that's something only that you can do, but it will present a visual representation of what a potential threat model in your case might look like. So there's an input area, an evaluation takes place, and the tool will output some concrete suggestions and pathways sort of as a starting point for you to build off of. I can't say exactly when this will go live, as it's still in development right now. And then once it reaches a point that Jay and I like, we're going to do some limited testing with folks we trust to make sure it's operating well and meeting expectations. If anyone is interested in testing it during that beta phase, shoot us an email for sure. We'll try to get it out to you when that time comes. We're probably going to limit the number of testers to a certain number, so I can't guarantee everyone who responds will get a link, but I would welcome anyone who's interested and willing to provide honest feedback and constructive criticism on the tool to get a hold of us about it for sure. And we're hoping to go live with it in a few months, and when it does go live, we'll be sure to announce it on our blog and social media. And just a reminder there, you can subscribe to our RSS feed through signaljam.me, or follow us on Mastodon, X, Blue Sky, or Lemmy, and fingers crossed that Reddit unsuspends us there eventually too. All right, that is it for this week. Again, I know it's a short episode, but I thank you for listening regardless. And if there's anybody in your circles that you feel is trying to get a grasp on privacy, if you feel that this episode is maybe a good starting point to get them thinking about these things in their life a little bit more critically, please feel free to share it with them. We're looking forward to your continued thoughts and feedback, and hopefully some article submissions in the near future here. Other than that, we will see you in the next episode. Stay private.